This is a production of Cornell University.
I think things have slowed down, so I will call the meeting to order. And first up is a roll call. Andrea?
Hello, everyone. I'm just going to go through these really quickly. And if you happen to see or come on a little bit later, anyone will make sure that it's represented. Adrian Durant.
He just joined.
Present. Oh,
yes. There you go.
All right.
Alan Mittman.
Hi, Andrea. I'm here.
I am here. Anise Schaff.
I'm here.
Thanks. Brandon. Welcome. Brandon Fortenberry.
Here.
Brenda Fisher.
Here.
I think Brian Goodell is still out. Claire Templeton. No, it's not. That's our ex officio member. Deborah Howell. Derek Barrett.
Here.
Ellen Miller.
Here.
Hey, hey, DePew.
I think she's still out.
Jackie Krecky.
Here.
Jimmy Duong.
Here.
Jeremy Stewart.
Here.
Jessica Townley. Jessica Withers is here. Joe Canella. Justin Chandler.
Here.
Michelle Loparco.
Here.
Kate Supran.
I'm here.
Kit Tannenbaum. Christy Mahoney.
Christy was not able to join us today.
Okay. Lisa Zacharias.
Here.
Marcus Brooks. Marcy Benda is just joining us. Marin Cherry.
Here.
Stacy Coyle. And Stephanie Rizzo.
Present.
Great. Back to you, Jessica.
Thank you, Andrea. All right, I'll read the land acknowledgement for us. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Goyekono, the Cayuga Nation. The Goyekono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Goyekono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Goyekono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. Thanks everyone for being here. Looks like we have a good crowd today. Any EA members that joined later, if you could just rename yourself with EA in front of your name, it's helpful throughout the meeting. The meeting is being recorded and live transcript is available if anyone needs to use that. So our first item today is the approval of the January 19th minutes. So I will open up for motions.
I move to approve.
Alan moves to approve. Is there a second? Marcy?
Second.
Thank you. We do these by unanimous consent, so not seeing any opposition, the minutes from January 19th are approved. Thank you. Our main item today is a presentation from our current employee-elected trustee, Reginald Harris. He's a senior director in HR and also chair of the Men of Color Colleague Network Group. So Reginald is going to talk about his position and also a little bit about what the Board of Trustees, what they actually do here at Cornell. Thanks, Reginald.
My pleasure. And so Harris is actually my middle name. So it's actually Reginald Harris White.
It's my mom's maiden name, and I think I constantly do this to you. I'm sorry, wife.
It's okay. It's not a problem. It's one of those interesting things. You know, you end up in a place where folks actually use your middle name. So it's a pleasure for me to be here. And before I actually even get started, I want to acknowledge that I'm not the only person on the call who actually has experience as an employee elected trustee. So Jeremy and Alan, if you want to provide some content and context around your experience, that would be also great. I'm not going to pretend I'm the expert. I'm just the current person. So what I would say, just thinking about this, and I don't have any slides or anything, this is a conversation, so I want it to be interactive and you can ask questions, et cetera. So the three things that I think are really important around the role of the employee elected trustee, the first piece is sort of, as Jessica mentioned, right, this sort of conversation around what does the Board of Trustees do anyway? Because I don't think most of us, before you actually go to a Board of Trustees meeting, it actually has any idea what that looks like. And so I'll start with what it says on the website. The Board of Trustees website says that the Board of Trustees has supreme governance over Cornell and all its affiliates. And so what does supreme governance mean? If you think about the shared governance model of EA, the Board of Trustees is the sort of penultimate governance body. And as the penultimate governance body, what that means is that all of us who are elected as trustees have a fiduciary responsibility to ensure that Cornell continues to operate. And sort of how that actually takes place, right, is we have meetings and lots of information gets presented to us, and there are committees and there are votes on various items to make sure that there is some accountability and shared responsibility for the decisions that, again, are connected to the idea that our primary purpose is to make sure that we're making decisions in the best interests of Cornell today and in the future. One of the things that I think is also interesting is, and it's not clear when, we sort of hear the information about what the employee elected trustee role is no matter how you get elected to the Board of Trustees, on the day that you become a member of the Board of Trustees, you are simply a member of the Board of Trustees. What that means is, so there are four or five different constituencies that get elected to the Board of Trustees. The first one, obviously, is the board elects its own members of the trustees. Then there are faculty and staff and student representatives. And then there's an alumni representative. So five different categories of ways that people get on the board. But once you're on the board, you are no longer just a constituent elected member. You are a member of the Board of Trustees. So it's a really interesting element that I think from the employee perspective, when we vote for someone, we think, right, that person's gonna advocate for employees, but the board is very clear that they don't expect us only to have a point of view about employee matters, et cetera. Again, as members of the Board of Trustees, our primary interest is in making sure that Cornell as an institution in its various places and campuses continues to thrive. The other piece I'd say is in terms of one of the things that's really fascinating about this role is, so once you understand sort of structure, right, then there's the sort of, well, what does it mean in terms of the mechanics and how it actually shows up? There is, if you think about, you know, the role you play, the job you have, you get some access to information about the department, the college, what your role is, how that all fits together. You rarely, except where we sometimes as the employee assembly bring people in from the senior administration to talk about various things, we rarely get a broad perspective of all the things that the university is dealing with. But the Board of Trustees has a broad view of what's happening at the university. So there are various committees. Those committees sort of think about the campus and its elements in various ways and have responsibility for kind of honing in on those things. So there's a finance committee, there's an audit committee, there's a research committee, there's a buildings and campus committee, there's a student committee. And each of those committees, right, there's a development committee for raising money, there's an investment committee for, you know, thinking about how the endowment is invested. And so each of these committees has its purview around a specific point of keeping the whole institution going. And then the whole board gets reports from the various committees on what's going on, what actions they've taken. If you're a member of a committee, right, you get to have a vote in the decisions that that committee is making. And then as a member of the board, you have, where there are things that need the whole board support, you get to have a vote in those kinds of things as well. But there's a huge amount of information. Right now, the information is being shared electronically. What I'm told is pre-COVID, right, the information used to be shared in these books, and you'd get these books from your various committees with all the information, and you had to read it if you like, but it's overwhelming. It is the classic example of drinking from a fire hose, loads of information, most of which you've never seen before or heard anything about. The last thing I'll say is this sort of insight piece around the role. So I think that the thing that I've appreciated most about being on the board is the insight I have into the challenges that it takes to sort of run an enterprise as large as Cornell. I think when we see people like Martha and Mike and Joanne and Mary and others, right, we have some, I'm going to call it modest appreciation of the complexities of the issues they deal with. When we put them all together and we hear about the decisions they have to make and the challenges around our resources and the ways in which and all the places where people are asking for, making requests for those resources to be expended in various ways to keep the whole campus prosperous and thriving, you have a completely different appreciation of what the university is and what it's trying to do and how it's doing it. So I think it is an extraordinary opportunity. It was an honor and a privilege to be voted as the employee elected trustee. I think of the things, so most of you have heard that I'm actually leaving the university. There were a number of factors that had me leave, but there are also a number of factors that had me pause. And one of them is the role that I play representing the employees on the Board of Trustees, because it is a unique opportunity to really get a chance to understand what the university is up to and what the challenges are of running an institution of this magnitude. And also, I mean, you get a greater appreciation. Most of the people who are on the Board of Trustees are Cornellians, and there is a love for this place that as an employee, you don't always appreciate. I'm an alum as well. And so, you know, I sing the alma mater song off key mostly, right? But I can sing it. And so there is a level at which, right, we kind of love the place. But when you see it in action, in the ways in which people make decisions about the current and the future state of the university, it is something to behold. So I'll stop there and I'll take questions. And Jeremy and Alan, please add your perspective if I miss something. Go ahead, Alan.
Yes, well, that was a really nice presentation, a good glimpse into the process. It triggered a couple of thoughts on my part. Senior administration, maybe some of you on this Zoom presentation help in this area, but one thing that struck me is that the senior administrators who attend the meetings work on presenting that fire hose of materials that Reginald talked about for an extensive period of time. It is a major, major obligation of the Joannes and the Marys, et cetera, to get ready for these meetings. The trustees are not shy about asking questions of them and asking for new materials to be prepared. So it's a tremendous really opportunity to hear from them, but it's just something I was surprised about is how much work the senior administrators put in just to prepare for these meetings, the committee meetings, which, by the way, as an employee elected trustee, you are, I guess, required to be on two or three of those committees. You can move around over your 4 years. And you know, as Reginald said, that's really where a lot of the work gets done. A second thing is the fact that you'll get these sort of unscheduled but permitted, sometimes protested, presentations. I remember having a presentation from a student group about divestment from certain oil and other related companies from the endowment. And so it's an opportunity even there to have a different perspective. And finally, I'll say, Reginald mentioned that once you're elected, you're in. And that's so true, and you're welcome. I felt completely welcome and equal to the trustees who maybe have been there for years, perhaps have donated large amounts to the university, yet your voice matters as much as anybody's in the committee and at the time to vote. So it is a golden opportunity. And I certainly encourage anyone to put their hat in the ring when the next opportunity arises.
Thanks, Alan. Jeremy, do you have anything?
Yeah, just to follow on what Alan was saying, the experience in the EA and/or the UA really does give you kind of a leg up in getting your head wrapped around the larger picture of being a trustee. Because as Reginald was saying, it's the broadest picture I've ever seen of the universe, and gave me a whole new respect for the operations of the university day to day and over a year. So having that to start with, it gives you kind of a leg up there. One of the things that was not entirely clear to me, and I think is important, is that all in talking about when you're a trustee, your fiduciary responsibility is to the university itself, and you're not a spokesperson directly for the best interests of staff. Your spokesperson for the best interests of the university, which thankfully generally aligns with the best interests of staff. But one of the things that I think is important is there aren't any committees directly related to staff on the Board of Trustees, and with good reason. And I had long conversations with Mary Opperman about this. I really appreciated the opportunities to have these conversations with our leadership. But as we were saying, that most of the trustees are very successful alumni from the university who have strong backgrounds in areas that are important to informing decision-making for the university in finance, in business, in risk analysis, in what have you. The thing that you don't normally see is someone with a lot of higher education HR experience there. And we have that in our leadership. So the reason you don't see those committees on the Board of Trustees is that decision-making is delegated down to our university leadership, who has focused experience in higher education HR. The value that you bring as a staff member to the Board of Trustees is you also have an experience set that doesn't exist elsewhere on the Board of Trustees. So they're bringing in finance and risk analysis. And what we bring in is we live here, we work here, we are day-to-day on campus, one or the other of them, and active within the community. And that's not an experience set that they can draw from elsewhere within the Board of Trustees. So they will often come to you with questions about how is this going to impact people. They don't normally specifically make it about staff, but how is this going to affect people living, working in the area? So having that broad knowledge of the university, having that broad knowledge of our counterparts here, being directly involved with the EA so that we have ways to talk to our friends and colleagues across campus is really important. But it's one of those things that I kind of didn't know before I started working on the board.
Yeah, and so thanks, Alan and Jeremy. And so open it up for questions. Yes, Brandon.
Well, I was really happy to hear, Jeremy, you provide that caveat that they ask your perspective as a staff member. I guess I just find it somewhat counterintuitive to have a constituent elected trustee to represent all of these, which sounds like, Jeremy, you have this sort of internal piece. I can't understand how there would be this strong voice to say you're not advocating for staff, you're advocating for the university when you're voted in as a staff. There's an alumni, there's a student, there's a graduate. Like, you know, I can understand, you know, when I go into a court of law, I've got to keep all of my personal beliefs out of it and interpret by the court of law. It just seems as if, and probably these are some of the things maybe, Jeremy, you had. How much did you feel like, and when you, maybe you did, I would hope that at times you did feel that desire to advocate for staff, where you ever felt like you were told like, hey, you know, you need to step, take a step back here and do this for the university?
It's and you know, Jeremy and Alan can chime in on this. And I think Jeremy's point explains why you don't have many opportunities to do that. And the reason is because the board is not actually, there are some decisions the board makes that have an impact on the staff, but the decisions, the broad decisions that the whole board makes have an impact on the whole community. And so as a result, as Jeremy said, right, there may be a point where something comes up. So you can imagine, right? I've been the employee elected trustee during COVID. So there've been lots of conversations about and presentations to the board from the administration about what we're doing in terms of testing, what we're doing in terms of classes, what we're doing in terms of opening and closing the campus. And so those are kinds of issues, right? That have a perspective that affects the whole community, staff as well. And so, but there's not the, and I think this is to me what's interesting about the board, right? The conversations are not advocacy conversations. The conversations are a sharing of information. As Jeremy and Alan pointed out, right? Our administrators who have to present information, right? Take a great deal of effort and time to make sure those presentations are ticked and tied and they're providing the correct level of information. And if some member of the board feels like there's some additional information they need, they're not afraid to ask for it. But it's not like you might think, right, that issues come up and they're sort of like, well, you know, they're going to make a decision to harm the staff. That's the other thing I think is really important that I heard from Jeremy, which I see in practice, is that these people love Cornell. And by extension, that means they love the whole of Cornell. And that includes us. And so they're not actually interested in making decisions that harm us. It's just not kind of, it doesn't feel like it's in their best interest or our best interest to do so. And of course, the administration would be presenting something that would say, you know, we're going to harm the staff, right? It's not really sort of the way the conversations actually roll out. And not really, I mean, I think this, and Alan mentioned this, there is a, because of this supreme governance, there is a deference to the board members from our senior leaders that's actually kind of surprising in some ways. It kind of like humanizes these folks because you realize, right, because when we're dealing with them, right, we're sort of like genuflecting and saluting and everything, right? And then you see them with people who they know have supreme governance over them, right? And they're like we are, right? They genuflect, not literally, right? But they're respectful of the idea that one of the presidents came up with this idea that the role of the board is noses in, fingers out. And noses in, fingers out means noses in to the information, be curious, ask questions, et cetera. But when it comes to the actual execution and implementation, you leave that to the administration. And so again, most of the information that comes, you know, it's all sort of in the best interest of what's good for the university. And I've not been in one meeting where something has come up where it has an impact on staff sort of more broadly that the board is sort of like, you know, bah, humbug, we don't care about the staff. That's not who they are.
That's exactly it. And I just want to build real quick on what Reginald was saying is, when we're talking about the decisions being made by the board, these are in general very broad topics and not specific to even implementation. These are more conceptual kind of decision making. So very often the decisions affect all of the campus community. It's very rare that they make a decision that affects staff. It affects all of the campus community. And this is the value that we bring as staff elected trustees, is that that's a point of information they don't have elsewhere to draw. They don't have a way to, they don't have it within their pool of trustees. So they bring in these constituent elected trustees from each of our groups on campus to provide that data so that they can make good decisions on these broad topics.
Gina, and then Alan.
Thanks. I was just going to say pretty much going off what Jeremy said, that it's, as I heard Brandon's question, you know, from a governance perspective, that the staff are electing a trustee, and it's not really to advocate on behalf of trustees, as has been said, but to provide a perspective from the staff experience to inform the decisions that the board is making. And I can say that Cornell is, it's an amongst a very few institutions that allow full voting members from the staff community and from the students, the undergrads particularly. You know, oftentimes they're allowed to sit in on meetings, they're ex officio, but as Reginald started this conversation, once you're in, you're a full voting member of the board. So it's more lending the perspective, and what a great opportunity it is to have that voice in those conversations.
Really is. Alan, you wanted to say something as well?
Yes. I certainly support what you and Jeremy have said. That's exactly my experience. But there is one other factor responsive to what we've been talking about in Brandon's question. And that is the role of the VP of HR, CHRO, Mary Opperman, and the person who's going to succeed that. Her. And I brought this up to the search committee interview team that we had an opportunity to meet, was it yesterday, to talk about the new position. And I emphasized the role that that position has with the trustees. And if you're looking for a voice of the staff in rather than the perspective, as has been explained, that voice is that position. That voice is Mary Opperman. She is, I would say from my experience, probably the most connected to the operations of the board of any of the senior VPs. She is closest to the day-to-day you know, fingers in, as Reginald put it. And so that role is significant. And not that I will be there to guide this, but the next selection, because of the criticality of that role and the staff perspective, anything from the SIP award, the budget, that those sort of things that the trustees ultimately approve, but that all gets done by the senior staff way before then in recommendations and in working with committees. So remember that position is there. I hope that the new person will be as strong and vocal, I'm sure they will, with the board. But that's really, at least I found that to be a very strong voice for all staff interests and all campuses.
Yes. And so because for me personally, because I work in her organization, you know, I had to always sort of walk this fine line, right? Because I didn't want to usurp her authority, right? Because that is her role. And so, you know, you if something comes up, right, where there's a sort of a conversation around, well, you know, what do employees think about this? I mean, she's the first person they ask. And then, right, then you know, if she's left something out or if there's some, you know, opening, right, there may be an opportunity to add just a different point of view. So I want to emphasize that as well, because I do think each of the VPs in the administration has some responsibility for their area of the university. And then again, as we've said, right, there's this sort of, we have a perspective, they have a perspective and a role and a responsibility to provide some of that information. And then, right, we can add to it. But I mean, I also wanna say for me, and I think Jeremy and Alan would agree, there's freedom in not being restricted to having only a voice on things that affect staff. There's freedom in sort of being able to ask a question, well, you're gonna invest X number of dollars in that dormitory. What is that? What are the implications of that? And no one looking at you and going, well, you can't ask that question because you're only a staff person. It's like, well, I'm a full member of the board as well. And as Jeremy and Alan have said, right, your voice can be heard in any of the conversations. Kit.
Hi, thank you for this presentation. And also, Reginald, best of luck to you in your new role. I'm very sorry to see you go. You're definitely an asset to our community. And of course, Jeremy and Alan with your employee elected trustee experiences. I guess I'm curious, from hearing all of this, would you consider there to be room for more, maybe two of each of the university constituent groups? I feel that I see the decision of having one staff trustee, one student trustee, what have you, but I almost wonder, would having two of each of those positions be too much for the trustee group?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And it reminds me of something that I meant to say earlier, which is not obvious. We have a huge board. We have one of the largest boards of any higher education institution. I think the number is 64. And then that does not include, added to that are ex officio members and emeritus members. And so the number total is over 100. And so with Zoom, as you can imagine, right, we've had the ability to have lots of people in the room, in the Zoom room. And so my understanding is, right, when we meet in person, it's not quite that many people, but it's a large board. And so I have a hard time believing, and maybe Gina might have a different point of view, but I have a hard time believing that someone would think that we could add another person to the board. There are two students, and then is it two grad students as well, Gina?
No, there's actually two students that currently we have. We had three because there were two undergrads, but they alternate. One grad and professional student is elected each year, and one undergrad. So two students.
Two students, right? So So there are two students, and then, you know, every other constituent group only has one. So faculty, alumni actually get two, I think. I'm sure of that, actually. That's not a question. I know that. Other questions or thoughts? I hope this is helpful.
real quick on what Reginald was saying about you know, having that power to ask questions that you might otherwise feel like you're not in a position to. One of the things that I learned in really my first months as a trustee was you also have to be cautious the question you ask, because someone will get you the answer. There's a level of respect. There's a level of respect for the trustees that means that you will have your administrative leadership going to find you an answer for that question. And I learned quickly that just the casual email off to someone could turn into something much more. So be very thoughtful about the questions you want answers to.
Yes. There's something, I call it a transcendence element to it, right? So you immediately sort of, in the moments when the trustees are meeting, and even in other times, like you sort of transcend your position in the organization. And depending on who you ask and what the question is and what the context is for your question, right? Suddenly you're not only a staff member, you're also a member of the Board of Trustees.
I ended up with one of our senior members of our buildings infrastructure explaining to me how land purchases work. So some basic knowledge, but it was quite wonderful and learned a lot, but next time I'll Google it.
So I hope this is really helpful. It's one of those things, thanks to Jessica for asking the question, because I just think, you know, we don't, you know, we do our process in terms of, you know, how we get candidates, and there's a whole process in terms of how that all works. But I think there's a lack of understanding of what this role really is, and even less visibility to what the board is and how it operates. You know, I can speak for all of us. I think it opens your eyes and provides some context around the university that is just, it puts you, the word that comes to my mind is awe, right? There's a level at which you cannot take in all the information and not be in awe of how wonderful and extraordinary this place is, and the kinds of things that we're involved in, and the ways in which we're making a difference in various parts of, in various ways in the world, in various contexts. So got a couple of other questions. I am not sure how to say your name.
Anise.
Yes. So thank you for taking the time to tell us about this. It's really exciting, and it's fun to hear about your experiences. My thought is, what a huge job. Like, I'm curious, just practically, how much time did you spend on this appointment?
Yeah, it's so basically what ends up happening, right, is you pretty much over the 2 or 3 days where the Board of Trustees meetings are going on, and that if you work near any of our administrators, you know this to be true for them as well. I mean, pretty much you can't do anything else, right? I mean, it's time consuming. And then there's the part around reading all the materials, which you sort of have to read in the evening. Or so it is a responsibility, and as such, right, it is it's massive. so that part. But the thing about, you know, reading the materials, the nice thing about the presentations is there's an assumption, right, that people have, you know, read some of the material before, but the conversations are open enough so that if, you know, something happened and you didn't get a chance to read it, you're still not left in the dark, because it's just sort of the nature of the group to be open and transparent around the decisions they're making. And because of the nature of the questions and the engagement of the board, you'll get a sense. You can skim some of the material without having to know every single detail. So that helps. But it is a serious responsibility. The other thing I forgot to mention is there is a public, because we're a public and a private entity, there are in some of our meetings, there's a public component of it. And so members of the public can attend. In the period that I've been on, I don't think we've ever had anybody, but as Alan mentioned, right, there was a period when there was a student protest and there are other kinds of things. And so the other thing I think it also matters is that you're a public figure, which means you can't actually just say things randomly that might be picked up in the press or otherwise, where you can't just answer questions about things without getting the university approved message about what that's supposed to be, because you're a board of trustee member, and your voice has resonance beyond just the board meeting itself. Andrea.
Thanks, Reginald. I just, and I know we had talked about this, but I can't express enough how grateful that you are having this conversation, but also the role that you've played as the employee elected trustee and the assistance that you've provided this current administration of the EA with our meetings with you and Mary, your perspective, your guidance, and your overall sense has been really invaluable. And I don't know if everybody understands that level of involvement that you have with helping to guide some of the perspectives and speakers and things that the EA does. And I hadn't realized it until I became executive vice chair of the EA. And I just want to express my gratitude to you personally and professionally for everything that you've done and wish you the best of luck. It is such a loss to Cornell. I hate to see you go, but I know you've got incredible opportunity and you will do great, great things. So I just wanted to express that publicly to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's bittersweet, right? It is one of the hardest I've ever had to make. And I joke that, you know, I'm a Cornelian through and through. I bleed red. I think I actually bled red before I became a Cornelian, but as an alum and then an alumni volunteer, I got re-engaged around the conversation. And for those of you who joined earlier, I met Alan on a plane going to South Africa, and we had a really nice conversation, and that prompted me to start thinking about working here, and I've been here for the last 5 years. And, you know, when I combine the 10 years as a volunteer and the years as an undergrad and my years here as an employee, I've spent most of my adult life somehow affiliated with Cornell. And so I do love the place, and I owe a lot of who I am in the world to it. And that's why I really have enjoyed serving and being of service, because I am who I am in part because of my exposure to Cornell and working with wonderful people like you. And so it's very bittersweet for me. Brandon.
I bet that line about the bleeding red before Cornell slays at the trustee meetings, for sure. I've never heard that before, but that's an excellent statement. I was just wondering, again, I appreciate everything you've done. I've really interacted with you and really enjoyed our interactions and seeing the work you've had to do. I know it's a lot, like having been to hear the presentations, but you know, just knowing all the legwork to reading all those reports and being engaged in that conversation a lot, and you've done a great job representing staff. So thank you so much. I just wanted to ask, so getting an understanding then, you leaving the university, how does that play into the position? Is it then an alternate that was, you know, already pre-assigned, or is there a vote that then comes back out and we re-elect the trustee? What are our next steps here? Now that we're sadly losing you, Reginald, but congratulations on that.
Yeah, so I think Gina's the expert in that space. But thank you, Brandon.
It's actually a subcommittee of the board, the Committee for Campus Constituent Elected Trustees, the CCCET, will meet in the next few weeks to start working on scheduling an election to fill the incidental vacancy that will be that is in place now because Reginald's leaving. So there'll be a trustee election for a trustee to fill out the term, so 2 years, much as Jeremy did when Chad Coates left. So there'll be a lot more information about that coming out. We'll also try and we'll be working with the EA Elections Committee to see if there's some overlap that we can do in terms of outreach and maybe even the election itself, but a lot more detail on that to come.
Thank you, Gina. And just I'm not sure if you could speak to, you know, the timing of it, because we do have the trustee meeting coming up on March 24th. Is there hope that that would be able to be completed? Or Reginald, are you able to fill out that long? I'm not sure how soon you're heading out.
I'm scheduled to or targeted to leave at the end of February. So I think, and I haven't worked out the details of all this, but I think officially, right, the day that I'm no longer an employee, I'm no longer allowed to be a trustee member from that perspective. And so as Gina said, more to come on that in terms of working out the details.
I can say that it likely won't be before the March trustee meeting.
Yeah, of course not. Of course not.
Thank you, Reginald. I really appreciate you giving this presentation. I think I reached out to you after my first Board of Trustees meeting, and I had never been to a board meeting with so many trustees. I learned so much that day. I learned more than my brain could take in. So I'm really grateful that you were willing to come meet with us. And thank you too to Jeremy and Ellen for adding their expertise. I hope EA members think about this as another avenue of service to the university and to staff. And before you leave, Reginald, I do want to say, you know, one more time, thank you for all you've done for staff at Cornell in all the hats you wear. And we've interacted with several of those hats here on the Employee Assembly. And as Andrea alluded to in the leadership meetings with Mary. So thank you, best of luck. I wish you all success.
Thank you. As I said, it's been an honor and a privilege to be part of this. So thank you for the support and thank you for the opportunity. And we talked about this, I was like, yeah, of course, you know, of course I'll do this, right? I just think it's a wonderful thing to be able to do. And so thank you for asking, and thanks Alan and Jeremy for backing me up.
All right, I think we'll move on to our committee reports. First up, Andrea, with the executive committee.
Yes, exec committee has been busy as I always talk about in the sort of rounding out the rest of the term with our guest speakers, Reginald, and we've got guest speakers scheduled for next week, next meeting, which is in 2 weeks. And then Mary Opperman is joining us on March 2nd. Right? March 2nd, to be able to have a one-on-one conversation with her. And so we'll certainly do some prep work related to that. We've been working with Wendy and a new format to be able to disseminate the agendas for our meetings. And so Wendy is working very diligently with all of the executive vice chairs of all of the assemblies to get us this new format from which that they'll be coming out. They're probably going to look exactly the same, right, Wendy? Can I get a nod? And Gina? They will look the same. It's going to be just a different process and procedure. So it doesn't have to come directly from the OAs and going from there. And then the final thing I want to say is we don't have a firm date, so we're not going to even talk about it date-wise, but there will be another forum that the employee assembly will do. It looks like it at this point in time, who knows, of course, is subject to change. I know Jessica doesn't want us to throw another date out and then have to backtrack from it, but it is planned at this point in time, hopefully before the end of February. And it would include some senior leadership that we'll be talking about sort of where we are now for a variety of issues related to employees. Not just, I don't believe just COVID, but obviously that's our main theme that we've talked about for the last few years, that if we talked about anything else, it would be weird. So stay tuned. We should hopefully know something about that very soon. And as soon as we have confirmation, we will let you all know.
Thanks, Andrea. Questions for Andrea or exec? Okay, moving on to Ellen and the Communications Outreach and Recognition Committee.
Hello. We are actively working on naming the awardee for the Staff Award for Integrity and Inclusion. We have narrowed down the nominees to the top four, and the full committee will be voting next Wednesday. So we'll have an announcement on that very soon. And then we are also working on getting the call for nominations out for the next round of the George Peter Awards for this spring semester. So those are the main focus right now. We'll also be planning at our next committee meeting next week, we'll be planning the February EA Voice. So if anyone has anything that they would like to include in that, please give me a heads up and we'll make sure it gets in there. And that's our plan right now. I know Derek and the outreach team are still looking at website stuff, but I think nothing major to report on that at the moment. And that does it for us.
Thank you, Ellen. Any questions for Ellen and the communications committee? Okay, next up was going to be Christy with the Employee Welfare Committee, but she was not able to join us. So I don't know if anyone else wants to give an update on that committee, Brandon?
I could give a quick one unless there's anybody else in the group. So we had a conversation today around an onboarding resolution that I've been working on. Since I was most of the conversation, I don't mind giving a quick report, but we finalized a resolution. Have a final draft. I've sent this to the assemblies to help with formatting to get it ready. And our plan is to, at the next EA meeting, is to hopefully have that here to bring to the EA and vote on this a resolution for improvement to onboarding experience. We will, of course, get that out to folks in advance so you have time to review it prior to the meeting. We had a little bit of conversation around some of the concerns around traffic on North Campus and the parking for the test sites, and that many parking spots have been occupied by cars for long periods of time and not just for popping in for testing, and how we might be able to address that. And Bridget was there to respond and is working actively on that situation. And then we had a really great conversation around some thoughts around humanity, right? How do we focus on humanity as an organization, not just Employee Assembly, but Cornell University, and how we focus on human beings, and what is the things that we can do in our work, in our organization, and our culture around promoting and enforcing that we are human beings, and that there are so many aspects of our lives that are outside of Cornell University, mm-hmm. and that the work that we do here should look to encompass more things that acknowledge our ourselves as humans, right? And that our time is important, and that our space is important, and that there are so many things that we can do as an organization to make improvements as it pertains to humanity of a culture. And it was a really great conversation. We have some great thoughts and ideas that I think we'll be further digging into around, you know, perhaps some communication strategies for the university or otherwise to really advocate again that this is a place where it's hard to at times to work here and it's hard at times to leave here, right? There are things at home and at work that are challenging, and everything we can do to enforce the fact that we are humans and that we have challenges in our lives is really important. So I really have enjoyed this conversation. I would definitely encourage others to join the committee conversation around this because I think it's a really great dialogue that could help to make a lasting and positive impact on the culture at Cornell.
Thank you, Brandon. That is my recollection of what we just talked about as well. But thank you for speaking up and sharing because it's not easy for my brain to switch that quickly. All right. Liaison reports. Any questions for Brandon or other members of the Welfare Committee? Okay, so we'll move on to liaison reports. Brandon, do you want to give an update on the UA?
So at the University Assembly, we had the Cornell University Borehole Observatory and Earth Source Heating Group present. This is actually the third time I've seen their presentation, and I enjoy it every time. Really cool stuff. If you haven't, I encourage you to look it up and see the cool work they're doing, digging a hole 2 miles down into the ground to find out whether or not we can pump water into this hole and bring hot back up, and they're not sure that it's going to work. It all depends on the situation down there and the types of rocks and materials and how deep they're able to get. But really great presentation. We had some conversation from the committees. I think one of the ones that probably stemmed the most questions and interaction was around in the Faculty Senate, there's a conversation around the dean's list and how that is implemented across the university. And the Faculty Senate has some conversations looking to make changes to that. And I don't wanna say definitively that it's to eliminate that because that gives the wrong impression. I think the idea is to look to shift to a different verbiage or a different metric by which they're utilizing it. We brought up some concerns from the student assembly around how they can do that and how that might impact students and their ability to get internships. So I think that was probably one of the key topics from the assembly groups that I wanted to bring up. So that was all I had to report on. Thank you.
Thanks, Brandon. Questions for Brandon? Oh. Jackie, do you want to go ahead?
Hi, so I the Faculty Senate hasn't met yet for this year, but what Brandon was just talking about, what I was hearing in the Faculty Senate meeting was the honorific titles. It might be a slightly different version or similar to what you're talking about, and how they're not consistent between different universities, different colleges, and how one place it's fairly easy and people are feeling that they're needing to compete, but then not feeling like it's a fair way to compete, and some people are feeling like they're not able to meet the expectations and they want something more level and equal across the colleges. And there's been great debate, as there often is in the Faculty Senate, about this has to be this way because it's, you know, this means so much here. And I know that there's not any strong feelings about making changes yet. There's still a lot of discussion about that. So I'm glad to hear that it has a lot more support from groups outside of the Faculty Senate. I didn't realize it came from students bringing it up.
Thanks, Jackie. Claire, do you want to add to this?
Yeah, sorry. I just wanted to add about like the dean's list like conversation. I mean, we haven't really had like a lot of discussion like in like student assembly, like official meetings. Right now, like a lot of the official discussion has been like the Faculty Senate, which I mean, I think that we should be bringing more of the conversation to students first before like there's any like decisions made. Cause there's a lot of like mixed opinions regarding like whether to get rid of the dean's list, whether to, I mean, like for instance, I think that like equalizing like honors across colleges is a good move. I wouldn't be in favor of getting rid of the dean's list because, I mean, I think it's something that a lot of students who might not be from well-connected families are reliant on to like get achievements when applying for internships, that sort of thing. But yeah, I really do think there has to be more discussion, more like opinions being heard from the students in the student assembly. I mean, I'm planning on like bringing it up in the next student assembly meeting, which is tomorrow, but yeah, we'll see where that goes.
Thanks for sharing that, Claire.
Jessica, I just want to make sure I clarify that it was brought up that it's in works in the Faculty Senate, and that Eve DeRosa, Dean of Faculty, said really encourage students to join that conversation mm-hmm. and to provide their voices and their feedback, as well yeah. as the Student Assembly representatives yeah. at the UA spoke to the importance of bringing that topic over mm-hmm. as well. So it seems as if it was one of those good scenarios where it was brought up at the UA, and that's what the goal is, to hear from the other constituency, and the Student Assembly went, hang on, wait a minute. What's going on? Let me hear more about this. And so I think it was a positive thing for it to be brought up so that there can be other perspectives brought in as well.
Thanks, Brandon. Any other liaisons want to give reports? Okay, so we'll move on to new business. Open discussion. If anyone has something, raise your hand. I'll also entertain motions to adjourn. It's 1:16. Brandon?
Well, being that it was quiet for a moment, I guess I would make a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn from Brandon. Lisa?
I second that.
Seconded by Lisa. And unless there's opposition, which I do not see, we will be adjourned at 1:17. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
See you and y'all. Take care.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.